Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ramble.
Welcome to Guilty Pleasures.
That was a lot.
As it is written. Hey, we're talking about Dune 2. As it was written.
And I'm just here.
We're talking about Muad'Dib.
We're talking about the Muad'Dib. We're talking about Usul. We're talking about Paul Atreides. Usul. The Muad'Dib.
The Messiah.
Usul. Atreides. I believe
this
is a whole thing.
Dune 2. Guys, we weren't going to do this episode, but this movie is just living in our head rent-free. It rocked our fucking world.
It's beautiful.
Fucking goddamn, buddy. I've been a Denis Villeneuve fan for a while, since Enemy, weirdly. I saw Prisoners, and I was like, oh, man, this guy is fantastic. I love this style of... You know, I'm going to zoom into the bark of a tree to set the atmosphere type of directing. So I watched Prisoners, love that. Watched Enemy, love that. And then jumped to Sicario. And I was this is the greatest
director that's this guy
that ever fucking lived.
Got the juice.
He's got the fucking juice.
That movie fucks
so hard that I was high while watching it. And then I don't know what it is. I willed the high to go away because I needed to pay attention. I was like, wait a second. It was almost like that meme. I don't know if you've seen it or if people who have seen it will know what I'm talking about. But a meme of a guy playing a game and he's like leaning back and then feeling like he has to lock in and then immediately leans forward.
The amount of times, yeah. I saw this movie with Garrick, the amount of times that we both just shifted forward in our chair.
Oh yeah. This was Zach's second time seeing the movie.
Was I busy?
He had one extra ticket.
I had one extra ticket.
You invited Zach over me?
You didn't want to watch this fucking movie.
I saw it.
Yeah, you already saw it.
Bitch, now I know where I stand. Good to know.
Wow.
Good to know. Yeah, wow.
Wow.
Wow, how do you think I feel?
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
I'm not going to see a movie with either of you.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to see The American Magical Negroes this weekend by myself.
Yeah, you're damn right you're going
to
see it by yourself.
I refuse
to watch that movie.
No, is it supposed to be bad?
Yes.
Damn. I thought it was supposed to be funny.
Oh my God.
I thought it was like a little comedy indie movie film.
No.
Shit.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's so funny.
Whatever. You guys are better friends. It's cool.
So it's Dune 2. Denny is cooking. We're going to talk about Lisan Al Gaib. We'll tell you about the Bene Gesserit. We're going to help you unwind and unpack all of these fun phrases. Obviously, this is going to be a spoiler filled combo.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to tell you what we loved, all the things in between. I want to start here and tell you. So we did an episode on Dune 1 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's
years?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like two years ago.
How long have we been doing this podcast?
You tell me.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, carry on.
Yeah. I
love it. And it's quaint going back to listen because we dove into Dune 1, which really is part one of this two-part story, like, and Dune 1 is setting the stage for Denny to then come in and cook in this one.
Oh, my God.
But I went and saw the movie with Maggie. She didn't watch part one, but I'm like, you know what? You love being part of the zeitgeist. I know you're going to be sad if and feel left out. I'm just going to give you a recap. So I showed her a recap on YouTube. Shout out to YouTube. You have great recaps. And I'm pausing every couple minutes, like a 6-minute recap, and I'll be like, okay, Bene Gesserit, okay, pause. They're the space witches. Great. Unpause. And then I'm going through, and I'm like, look, basically all you need to know is that it's an allegory for the Middle East, yeah, but it's a hero's journey, and this guy Paul comes in, and he's gonna save them. And about 10 minutes into the movie, I lean over and I go, I was wrong.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Because holy shit, now that it, the reason I saw it twice is because I finally now understand what the fuck Dune is.
What
and we'll get it. And it took me
is what it is.
six hours of wrapping my head around this world to go, oh, that's the story that we were telling. And here I thought that this was just your regular old hero's journey, white savior, man comes in, saves the world. No, this is the rise of a dictator.
Oh my God, wait, can I just watch this podcast? Do I have to participate? Because I want to hear that.
Yeah.
Tell me what I'm missing.
Oh, all right. You saw Dune 2, right?
Yes, and one. But I don't know what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
I have my own theory about him using Zendaya, but.
Yeah, that's not a theory. It's real.
That's right.
Yes.
He's using Zendaya.
Yes.
He's a bad man.
He's a bad guy. I love this.
He said, I will love you till my last breath.
Yeah.
And that was a lie.
That was a lie because he was just like, I'm going to marry this other lady for political power.
This is the rise of Darth Vader times 10.
Yeah.
There's a moment.
He's the villain?
Yeah. You're watching the rise of a villain.
Did you watch the movie?
Yeah. This is, you know, the Phantom Menace, you know, where it's just like you're watching but it's just like, oh, wow, look at this adorable child. Why is his shadow in the shape of Darth Vader? Because you're watching Darth Vader grow up.
I thought the bad guys were the white fucking bald.
Everyone's bad.
Everybody's bad.
It blew my mind when that clicked in. We'll rewind the clock. We'll get into it. But there is a moment towards the end of the film where Timmy Chalamet has his villain turn. We'll talk about it. And from that moment forward, this movie just locks in a way that I could not believe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I'm so tempted to go to the end, but. What the fuck, man, this movie.
Yeah, this movie rips, man. It's really hard to sit here and talk about every plot point like you can really, I don't know. No, I don't want to say that it's not understandable, but it's like pretend like you aren't in awe the entire time you're watching. The entire time I was watching it, I was just like, I don't want to analyze this at all. Mm-hmm. I kind of just want to experience it. Mm-hmm. I kind of just want to feel with the audience. There was a guy sitting in front of us, like right to like our right hand corner side, and he was like a row in front of us, and he was of the age to have seen the original Dune by David Lynch, and of the age to be affected by the book when it first came out, and you could feel his excitement through like the two rows of the audience, and he was just like fucking like so happy, so excited. And
the beginning of the movie, you see the Harkonnens, which are the big bald dudes.
Big bald guys.
They're in a spacesuit, and they to climb a mountain, they just float.
And y'all kept talking about this, and I was like, what is so special about this?
So
it's crazy.
It's fucking weird.
I mean, like, they're in space, are they not?
They're not in space. They're on Arrakis. They're on a planet.
We're in space.
Aren't they wearing spacesuits?
No.
They're wearing suits
because they come from a planet that has a black sun and they can't see.
That's why they're so white?
That's why they're so white. They can't see infrared, or it bathes them in infrared light, and so colored light affects their eyes in a really bad way. They're kind of blind.
The spacesuit wasn't what made them float.
No, they're so like the
why are they floating?
The Harkonnens, or I guess in this world, because
I also
someone
don't
else,
know why they float.
Oh yeah, because somebody else uses it. I think some of the Atreides use it, or Gurney Halleck uses it. I'm not sure.
So many
I don't remember.
Words.
But sorry. There is a device that allows you to float that the Baron was using to float his big body when he was just like in the first movie.
That
my Arrakis.
So large.
My blah, blah, blah. My Dune. And he's floating. And it's
I'm
like
going to argue one of the what's so fun about the movie is that it's so dense with lore.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just doesn't matter.
It's all lore.
And it has its reasons. But for me watching, I don't know why they're floating.
You just
kind of fucking let the movie tap into you, and you go, oh.
This was just a coming of age.
You read it as just a coming of age?
Yes. I was like, this is big Timmy boy's moment.
Yeah.
He's falling in love. He's getting his dick down for the first time. His mom's hallucinating.
Yeah. With his sister.
Yeah, with his sister, who he also can talk to. He Jesus. He's the coming of age.
Yep.
Messiah.
He is Jesus.
So what I have learned since, that many Dune heads know, all the Doonies out there. Shout out to the Doonies.
Shout out to Dunes.
Dune is a cautionary tale about messiahs. That's what the whole thing is. Mm-hmm. It is about, and it's also an allegory for the Crusades, I believe.
Oh.
About how, like, the Ottoman Empire fell. It was the most...
This was very religious, it felt.
It's extremely religious.
Yeah, well, because it's like Christianity came in and destroyed this once powerful civilization. And it's about the false promises that prophets make. So, okay, let's try and break down, like, the lore and the names.
Yeah.
Basically, Paul, Timmy Chalamet...
Timmy T
is... foretold as the Messiah, the Lisan al-Ghaib, the Muad'Dib.
Yeah, foretold through the Bene Gesserit.
The
space witches laying out.
The ones with the tall heads.
The one with the tall heads, the Reverend Mothers, laying out a path or a prophecy for him to walk through. That's one day there will be a man that can see into the future that will lead them to the promised land.
For everything to go back green.
Yeah.
So essentially, what you have is these white ladies, these crazy white space witch ladies, make up a prophecy, tell the Fremen, the native people, that one day your savior will come. And then they give Lady Jessica, Timmy's mom, is... Bene
virgin
Gesserit.
Mary.
She's a Bene Gesserit. She gives birth. She's not a virgin. She fucks.
Mm-hmm. It's giving Mary, and he's Jesus.
She is of the people that made this prophecy.
Uh-huh.
Then she gives birth. They come in and they say, "Here's your savior." And they warp and twist the hopes and fears of these native people for their own gain. And as we will see in the future movie, destroy these people for their own personal gain.
Yeah.
So it's like Game of Thrones meets Pocahontas.
Sure. Yeah, but like instead of dancing with wolves, they just kill the wolves.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's
or
sad.
Use the wolves to kill other people.
So I can't believe he doesn't really love Zendaya.
And I'm not sure if he does or doesn't. Yeah, I think he does.
I think he does, but I don't think he like will respect it in a way and put it above his own political game.
I'm going to predict right now she's killing him.
Okay.
That's what I think as well,
I think it's going to become her story.
Let's talk about her. Zendaya, who has all of 10 minutes of screen time in the first movie.
We were pissed. We were so mad last time.
Yeah, it's so funny.
She plays Shani, which took me till the end of the movie to not realize her name wasn't Johnny.
Oh my God, same! It's not Johnny?
No, it's Shani. Chani.
Well, fuck me.
Zendaya is excellent in this movie. And we've been known that she's an excellent actress.
Yeah.
I think this is next level for her in a way. And for almost everyone in this movie.
I think that she does these like really, really subtle shifts to where MJ, Rue, and Shani are completely different characters, while also being like
the same,
so like subtly
strong,
but like it's like a subtle difference,
yeah.
Where I can tell that Johnny is, I don't know, 25, 26, Zendaya's age. Rue is a teenager dealing with something very heavy, and MJ is a child dealing with a crush. And dealing with getting into college. And like, it's almost like Rue and MJ, the difference between the two is drug use. And one is like innocent and the other one isn't.
And the difference between Rue and Johnny is space.
It's space. Space and age. I feel I read her as an adult person. And yeah.
I think it was so smart having her hold over the first movie, because you enter this one and, like, you know, it's playing on my expectations as fucking someone rips. Who doesn't know the story.
It's so
good. I'm like, this is going to be a sweeping love epic. And
yeah.
I am so fully bought into them. Before we started recording, I was playing the love theme that Hans Zimmer has for this. It's so beautiful. And, like, they have this scene where they're sitting on the dune and he finds out her, like, everyone has, like, a desert name, like a warrior name. It's like, what's your secret name? And she says it, and he's like, I love it. And she goes, I hate it. And he goes, then I hate it too.
And I hate it too.
And then she's like, I prefer this name. He's like, then I prefer that too. And I'm like, holy shit, Timmy, the Riz that is
Riz God
dripping off the screen.
Yeah.
But they the Fremen do. I'm going to be all over the place this episode. The Fremen have this sand walk that they do so that they don't disturb the worms.
Yeah.
Of course. So this is the sentence I'm saying.
They don't have... So they do a sand walk so that it is unrhythmic. And so worms are attracted to steady pulses in the sand.
They have a shot of Zendaya teaching Timmy how to do the sand walk. And the two of them are walking into, like, their silhouettes, like, as, like, the sun is setting.
It's beautiful.
And it's like them dancing together, yeah, but it's them so learning stunning. The ways of the desert, and it's just like
the way that this movie is epic and intimate at the same time.
Yeah,
fascinating.
Fascinating.
I can't talk much about the story, but I can talk a lot about how fucking beautiful it
is. Pure, like, pure fucking style,
wide,
dripping off of shit. There's, like,
soft,
so many
though.
There's a shot. Oh, there's a shot.
Eric has disappeared into
his
chair.
Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry. There's a shot overhead of Muad'Dib walking through the crowd in the desert. And the way that it looks from overhead, it looks like individual pieces of sand while also on sand.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Uh-huh. And the way that that shit ripped so fucking hard.
Yeah.
It's like I for you to compose that and then have the time and the vision to just be like, you know what? I know this movie is kind of about sand. It would be really cool if I could figure out a way to make a crowd look like sand.
That's the thing is, like, I was not expecting this movie to look as fucking real as it did, because there are you want to talk about huge set pieces. You want to talk about huge battles, huge fights. But it surprised me in so many ways that I wasn't expecting. And I was ready to see really bad CGI. I was ready to see.
Not with Denny.
I was ready to see it too crispy, too digitally. Yeah. Like, this felt so real and soft, but we're literally talking about like the big machines against sand. And yet my favorite scene, honestly, was when Zendaya and Timmy T were tag teaming.
Yeah. The thing that was like shooting.
Big robot.
The big bad robot in the sky. And they were jumping between feetsies, big T-Rex feetsies.
Yeah.
Metal T-Rex feetsies.
The excavator was like, oh my God. It was so good.
Okay. First of all, they do this thing repeatedly through the movie and it got me
every time. Fucking time.
Where the Fremen will hide in the sand.
With their little fucking straws.
My claustrophobia was like,
and they're just waiting under the sand, and the bad guys are coming, and then all of a sudden, whoosh,
they all
rise, and they all just start.
They know the ways of the desert.
They do this like 5 times, every time I'm like,
And the shots were interesting and surprising. Like my favorite out of that scene is when Zendaya is shooting Big Bad Helicopter in the sky, but it reverses and it looks out of the sniper glass at Zendaya, but she's putting down the gun.
That shit ripped so fucking hard.
It goes back to him realizing that the fucking bomb is already shooting it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God.
Fucks.
Like, this is the type of shit that made me go like, this feels different than any
other.
You know,
sci-fi.
I fucking hate, those big superhero movies, the big Transformers, big metal, cling clang, ouchies. Can't stand it.
Yep.
But like the way this man has thoughts makes them different. Like you watch these huge battles, not to go to the end, like you said, but I won't spoil too much. But the last big battle scene is done with zero score. And all it is sound effects, which is grunts and metal clanging. And I was like, and it's done at the fucking sunset in a crowd full of people on tile. Like, it was just a choice.
Yeah.
It was an aesthetic choice.
That is what this movie is. It is a series of distinct choices. Very, very distinct choices.
Because beautiful.
Even on the scene where she's putting the rocket down, revealing that she's already shot, and she's like, I already got your bitch ass. I don't know who gives a fuck. And the way that the ship explodes, so the way that the shields work in this is that nothing fast can penetrate a shield. That's why they always wait to shoot a laser, because lasers are too quick. In this world, lasers were a big thing because they
deactivate the shield.
Order to, so they made shields that blocked everything that moved too quick. So like bullets won't go through, all of that stuff. So they've invented things that come at you slow, or like go fast and then go slow or whatever and explode or whatever. And that's what she shot. And so it like burrowed through the shield and then exploded. But the coolest thing about that shit is that when the explosion goes off, the shield still remains because the explosion is still fast. So it's still blocking the explosion, and it keeps it encapsulated in the shield until the shield generator explodes.
Whoa.
And then the whole thing explodes.
My favorite bit of that is that, so you have this shot. We're just going to hyper-focus it on this one moment.
I fucking love it.
And then it cuts to a wide of Zendaya running, and all the sound is out. Except you just hear her laughing, going, and there's like 3 seconds of her running, joyful, exuberant, and then
boom,
the helicopter crashes, explodes next to her.
So
and like, then the score bursts in, and you're like, let's go.
Fucking rips.
See, okay, will this win Best Cinematography?
It has to.
I don't know what else is going to come out, but this is going to win many awards.
Yeah.
Did Dune 1 win any?
I don't know what
think
it won.
So.
Why was this one so much better?
Because it had the brevity of the context of the first one.
Yeah.
It the first one was just like, we've set everything up, now go. Mm-hmm. You know, go run, go fucking have fun with the last 2/3 of the move of the book, because although it's not like really action packed, it is a lot of just like, this happens, that's epic. And then we move past that to another political conversation.
You're right. It set the world.
The director's talked about it too. Denis Villeneuve has said, like, after the first one, he prayed that he got to make the second one because he did all the homework.
Yeah.
Like the first movie was all of the prerequisite work to set up this world. Yeah. And now he has the sandbox.
Yeah.
He gets to
fucking run. Yeah.
Because this movie was it was slow, but I fucking loved it.
Yeah,
which is weird. And going back to something you said, it's something that Denis Villeneuve does and Christopher Nolan. They're similar directors to some respects, where this and Oppenheimer both did that thing. You know, okay, Dune 2 has a lot of big action set pieces, but for a lot of it, it manages to make intimate moments feel massive in a way that I still don't understand. I mean, I'll probably study my whole life and not understand how Oppenheimer did that.
Yeah, there's something about being empathetic towards people who are like war torn or who have seen like crazy fucking things, where it's just like, yeah, we sit here and we like pretend like we're safe all of the time, but if we were born in a different country or different anywhere else, the shit that we would have seen at a young age would have been fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And for you to then put yourself in that predicament and then shoot from that angle, I feel like adds a lot of that like epic, it adds a lot of the intimacy to the epic nature of the set piece or whatever you're filming. It's just like you really do have to put yourself there.
Now, if you were like me, or maybe you're like Kelsey currently, there's a lot of words in Dune.
Yeah, a lot of names.
We're going to do our best now to break them down.
Yes, please.
So we have Arrakis.
Yeah, that is the desert planet that they are on, that they are trying to get...
Spice.
Melange, which is what they call Spice.
Oh, shit. You already lost me. What's Melange?
Melange is what Spice, I guess that's like its scientific name, but that's what the Space Guild uses to navigate planets, because you have to chart out the path of like an interstellar jump so that you don't hit anything. And so you kind of have to see into the future where
Spice
everything
Spice is
will
a
be.
Drug that allows you to kind of trip and see the future.
It's,
I didn't know that that's how they use it for inner space travel.
Anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I remember.
So Zendaya's people,
the Fremen,
are the native people
of Arrakis.
Uh-huh. They can see into the future to make sure they don't hit planets?
I believe so. It's a weird type of like humanoid person that can do this.
Oh, okay. So it's not the Fremen.
They're high on spice.
But why
are they taking
the exposure to spice is what makes their eyes blue, and it's just everywhere. Which is it's actually worm poop. It's not said in the movie for whatever reason.
Yeah. It's worm shit.
That is what happens.
So it's literally
what they
shrooms.
Excavate. Yeah.
Excrement is excavated.
Excrements. That's what they excremate. That's what they
say. Sure.
Okay. The Harkonnens.
Big white people.
Big bald white people.
But
very pale. Austin.
Does that mean we get to talk about Austin Butler?
Well, yeah, big boy Butler. You condense quick.
No. I'm going to just stay with all our terms.
Our terms first.
Now, Paul.
Yeah.
Timmy Chalamet.
Yep.
He has 14 names.
14 names.
Usul.
Usul.
Which means desert mouse.
No, Muad'Dib means desert mouse.
Fuck.
Usul is pillar.
Oh, Usul means pillar.
Yeah. Usul is the name that somebody from Arrakis or a Fremen gives you, I believe. And then...
you also have a secret. So you have a Fremen name.
Yeah.
And then you have a Fremen warrior name.
That you give yourself.
So Usul, Muad'Dib... Muad'Dib means desert mouse.
Yep, because they're smart and small.
Then there's also...
I fucking love this shit, man.
Lisan al-Ghaib. Which is...
Messiah, I believe. That is their name for the Messiah in Fremen culture.
Then there's the Bene Gesserit.
Yep, the Bene Gesserit or the Space Witches.
This sounds like a Nissan sale by Benny and the Jets is what I'm
hilarious.
Hearing. That's what my brain says.
I think that it... This is what Star Wars came from. If you complain about like, oh my God, there's so many names in this, blah, 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 and what am I doing? This is where sci-fi came from. It is from Dune. And for everybody to then be like, well, what are all these names? This doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, but we all know what a Jedi is. Like, we've learned this 4 years. It's just that it's the our first foray into what actually started all of this, all of the sci-fi boom. The only reason why George Lucas made Star Wars is because he wanted to make Dune, and they were like, no. And so he made Star Wars. And so it's like, if you can try to make those parallels in between the two, it makes it a lot easier and it makes it a lot more palatable.
Does Warner Brothers own Dune?
No.
Sure.
I just want to see Dune at an amusement park, like the way they have the Star Wars land and stuff in Harry Potter World. I would like to see Dune World.
I would too.
I would do some spice.
Yeah, right? I would. The way I would wear a still suit. A still suit is the giant suit that they wear that takes all of the moisture from their body out, that any that leaks out, any sweat or whatever, and recycles it and turns it into drinking water.
Let me tell you, I would be seen as a fucking god there because your girl,
she sweats.
She's liquid.
Yeah. Do you pee? Do you pee and poop also? You also
listen. I got water and liquids all the time coming out of every hole I've ever had.
All right. Hilarious.
I would have been the fucking messiah over there. All right. Okay?
Hell yeah. Fuck yeah.
There's Javier Bardem.
Oh,
so funny.
Is pitch
Daddy.
Perfect. He is so unbelievably Daddy. Funny in a movie that needs levity in such a real way.
Yeah.
I thought about him with your not gross at all moisture bit because he'll always, like, someone's crying and he'll wipe it away and be like, don't waste the water.
And he licks it. He's like,
And then when Lady Jessica's going to vomit at the beginning, he's like, don't let it out.
Don't
let it out because water is so crucial.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this motherfucker played, like, he's actually, oh God, he's so good.
Wait. He's great. He's fantastic. A lot of people,
he's
or
funny.
Not a lot of people. He's
he brings
people,
the comedic relief and not in a forced way.
People were like, "Oh, why is there a funny? Why did he become funny in the first place?" I thought he was pretty humorous in the first movie.
It's
as well.
Earnest. It's earnest from his belief. It's from his true belief that he is Messiah.
Yeah.
It's not. He's not kidding around. He's not like providing jokes, yuck yucks. He's like, no, this is what I truly have a passion and belief for. Passion of the Christ.
Yeah,
and it's what I. It's such a brilliant choice. Choice by Denis Villeneuve to make him a hilarious character and Javier Bardem as well, right? Because he's hilarious. He's like, oh, this like religious crank uncle who believes in Ed, the running joke is anything that Paul does, he'll just say in Fremen, as it was written.
As it was.
Like, oh my God, Lisan al Gaib. Like,
it's
everything that Paul does, like Paul sneezes and he's like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Everything that Paul does in his mind fulfills the prophecy. Mm-hmm. Even when Paul chooses the name of Desert Mouse as his warrior name, everyone laughs. He's like, no.
Yeah.
That's a very good name. Like, this dude rides harder for Paul than any wingman has ever rode for anyone.
Yeah.
And what makes it such a brilliant choice is that you laugh it off. And then at the end, you see, oh no.
This is real.
Religious extremism will have people follow you to terrible, terrible choices.
Yeah.
And something that we have been smiling at and laughing at that's been right underneath our noses now allows this horrific man to rise to power in a really scary way.
Yeah.
So
beautiful.
How does at the end when Timmy's fighting the big bad white guy,
who we will get to,
because he deserves his own moment in that chiseled jawline. What happens to the Freemen
and
the Fremen?
Yeah, aren't they fighting for him?
Yeah, but
it's
they're
a big question.
Yeah,
and. I don't know if I want to answer it yet. Maybe now I want to talk about Austin Butler.
Yeah,
just to keep Austin fucking with you.
Oh my God. Austin Butler. Am I right, guys?
Wow.
Sure.
So everybody was talking about the Oppenheimer black and white, and I was like, oh yeah, that's really cool. But I think that this is the best black and white sequence that we have ever seen.
Ever.
Like, so to set the scene, we are on the Harkonnen homeworld, which is Geti Prime, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it is covered in the light of a black sun. And so it only sheds black and white light. And so the only way that you can get like some form of like stark contrast, like let's say there's a scene where there is fireworks or whatever. They go to the fireworks and they look like ink blots, or they look like Rorschach tests and all of that stuff. It's just like, because those are the only things that would actually emit some form of spectacle, some mm-hmm. form of saturation. And that's also why they paint their teeth black and all that stuff. That's not, I don't think any of this is in the book. I don't remember this being in the book, but it's just really cool to see. But to watch a full gladiator fight in black and white for a legitimate reason and not just being like, oh, we're getting in the past now. This is all this stuff. And it's just like, no, there's a like a technically scientific reason why this is shot the way it is.
I didn't even realize it turned to black and white. That's how good it was. And that scene of the doors opening and Austin Butler's big ass head.
Big ass
with
head.
With a big ass jawline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That man.
No eyebrows.
Looked scary.
He's
as
terrifying.
Fuck.
Very good villain.
And someone was reviewing it saying something about like the original, in the
Babe
original.
Rotha was Sting.
Was, yeah. And he was like a little bit more playful bad boy, like rock star bad boy. This, Austin Butler was a fucking psychopath.
But he was like still playful. And I think he was like playfully
He was like playing
psycho.
With his food before yeah. he killed it.
I think that he was
horny for death.
He was yes. horny for death and horny for pain. He was a sadist? He or is it a masochist?
Both.
Yes.
He licks his knife. There's a scene when like he watches his own father get killed, and there's a reaction shot, and he seems turned on.
Yeah.
He's just like, anytime something happens, he's like,
yeah.
Hey,
Wait, when did he watch his dad get killed?
And he stabs him in the neck.
No, that's his uncle.
Oh, his uncle. Thank you.
Oh,
okay,
I was like,
bad.
Wait, yeah.
Because his cousin was David Bautista, and yeah. I didn't understand that family connection. Yeah, they don't seem like they look like it.
I would
all.
Like to remind you that in our review of the first movie, you said that Dave Bautista was hot in this film.
Yeah, I stand by that.
Okay, great. Just wanted to get that on the record.
I just don't think they look related.
There is a Letterboxd review where someone said that no one has ever looked more bald. Like, however bald you think
yeah.
a person can be, Austin Butler looks balder.
What? I forgot. Somebody on Twitter found that he was like, I think that there is a secret writer out there that is trying to make what is the word to make regular? I'm sorry,
regulate,
normalize.
No, he's somebody who's trying to normalize being bald and having a bald head out there. He's just like, yeah, but what if we made the villain more bald?
What the baldest that anyone
baldest
has ever
anybody
been.
Ever
no
been.
Eyebrows. Face
and
bald.
Face bald. Completely bald. And then they found that this writer has written something else with Denis Villeneuve. And that bad guy also was bald.
And
it's just like, oh shit, it's real.
It's him.
But
something's happening. All the movies are making me want to shave my head, shave my whole body.
The whole body. Because, like,
you spent. Please don't.
I know. I work too hard.
Yeah,
too hard.
Much
I work too
money.
Hard to barely get here. Don't laugh, Rainey.
But even still, like the fact that like his eyebrows, he had no facial hair, he had black teeth, which is the only time I've ever seen that work.
He looked contoured,
yeah.
Yet he was all white.
He was all white.
I my complaint of the movie, if I had one, is I wish I had more of him.
Yeah.
Oh, amen, sister.
Yeah, I wish
the fact that he died,
saw,
sad.
I wish I saw more like crazy shit that he was doing. Because also, like, all of the crazy shit that he was doing was to other people. I think there was one scene where he did cruelty to the Fremen. But I wish there was, like, more to, like, be like, oh, this guy is terrifying.
It's just, he's cooking. He's so in his element. Austin Butler, you know, coming off of Elvis, there was this question of, like, does he have it or is this just...
Oh, he got it.
Of course
it.
He fucking got it. Has it.
And that was my other question, was there was, like, talk on Twitter or TikTok that you can hear the Elvis accent in this. Do you guys agree?
No.
No, I he's doing something.
Doing something.
So he had apparently had a dialect coach to sound like Stellan Skarsgård.
And
Skarsgård.
I thought he...
Oh, he nailed
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so he was mimicking him because it's just like, that's
oh,
what...
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. that.
But that's how why he always, like, he's got, yeah, yeah, my name's fucking, and you know, Austin, my name's Austin Butler, yeah, and the way that I like this movie,
He stays like that.
He stays there in that raspy voice.
Dune.
Dune.
On the black and white, do you know about how they shot it? It's really cool.
No.
Yeah, so normally, I guess I could have saved this for the fun facts, but normally when a movie is black and white these days, it'll often actually be shot in color, and then they make it black and white after the fact. And this, it's because studios get really scared. Like, black and white is scary, and so to shoot natively in black and white they often chicken out. What they did for this is they shot with infrared cameras, and it's like a totally different lensing type. It's it gives that really intense, vibrant black and white, and it also is unpredictable. So they had to test every fabric, every shade of everything, because, you know, you could be wearing all black, but your shirt in the infrared would appear white and your pants would be more charcoal. And like, it just, it was, it would pick up colors and the absence of color in really surprising ways. And so Denis Villeneuve went to the studio and he's like, just so you know, there's no going back. Like, once we do this, we do this. And they said, Denis, cook.
It That's was so great. Cool. I love how much liberty he was given with this movie, because this is what happens when you kind of just let a singular vision cook, essentially, or just let them do what they need to do. Trust them. I feel like that's what it looks
like. And how
could
you not? You have to trust, because this story is bonkers, batshit crazy.
And it's,
we've barely begun to scratch the surface of how insane this is. The movie begins with the shot of a baby floating in the womb, and then we get to hear the baby in the womb talking. That baby then drinks the water of life, then becomes it, the infant, the fetus in the womb, through the water of life, gains the memories of tens of thousands of years of Fremen, and now...
Is it a Fremen of Bene Gesserit?
I'm not
it
sure.
Just a society?
It can see the past.
It can see
that
the
only
future.
Woman can handle, by the way. Love that line.
Yeah, I love that.
So when I get into the theater to go see it with Garrick, I sit down and I put my drink in the seat holder next to me, the right. First of all, where do you put your drink?
The right side.
That's the proper side.
No, it changes.
No, you put your hands up. B for bread.
Beverage.
D for drink. No, B
D
for bread.
For drink. D for
bread. B for bread. D for drink. Your drink goes on your right side. Anyway, I put it in, and the woman, the movie's already started. The woman's like, "Actually, that's mine." And I go, "Oh, okay." And like, cause she was like taking a sip, I guess, at that exact moment that I put my drink down. So, and then I look and Garrick has his drink in the right side, cause of course he does. And so I just go like, whatever. And I put my drink on the floor, and she's like, "Well, no, you can ask him to move your drink over." And I'm like, "It's fine. It's fine. You're wrong. I'm not going to argue with you."
Yeah.
I just accepted it. Then fast forward into the movie, they have this line where they go, the water of life. And it's like, "What would happen if I drank it, mother?" And it's like, "No man can handle it. Like, men would die if they drink it." And the woman goes, "Ha," and elbows me like, "You see that?" And I'm like, "Lady, we're not doing
this
together."
What is that even in reference to?
We're not doing Dune together.
That was a reach. I rebuke that as a feminist.
That's
she
so
didn't
funny.
Get that one.
And then Garrick and I walked, we walked to get his car at the end. I called an Uber, and she looked by and goes, "Hi, neighbors." And I'm like, "You need to, we do not have a bond." We're not, nothing happened between us in that theater.
That's so funny.
Although that could be a hot debate topic if you put that on Twitter about which holder do you put a drink
Where
in.
Where do you put the drink in?
Because
when you get to a movie theater,
no,
you put your drink.
Zachary, we already heard you explain yours.
In the right.
Listen to me.
What is
we're at the date. Hey, we're a date. We're splitting a drink. Where are you putting it? On your right? Absolutely not. You're putting it in the left.
But it depends on where you're sitting.
What if we're like this?
If we're like this, it's on the left side.
Exactly.
Well, okay, if you're on a date, you put it in between you. But that does not all of a sudden give you access to the cup holder to your left
for
your snacky.
I'm then putting my candy in there.
To the right, you can, but
no,
left.
Oh, no, I'm putting my candy in left.
No, that's someone else's.
Zachary.
You get one cup holder, Kelsey.
Are you out of here? What, am I in a middle seat on the plane here?
Yes.
Are you crazy? You actually should put this on TikTok, because I feel like we could break the internet.
You have one cup holder.
That's
cup
so
holder
funny.
To your
you
right.
You think I got two hands. I got two holes. You think I'm using one?
Okay, the new fancy movie theater gives everyone two cup holders on both sides. But traditional movie theaters have one cup holder between seats.
You know what I think?
If you take two.
Survival of the motherfucking fittest. Who is there first? I'm claiming three if I can.
Okay, I want you to pretend. Here, put if you're sitting to the put a drink next to me.
He threw it. Audience, he threw the drink.
I like didn't even. I tried to grab it in my hand, like it rejected.
Yeah, he's got magnets in his hands.
I have never once.
That's
thought of. I put my candy here and my drink here, or my drink here and my candy here, and then I usually put my popcorn and nachos under my feet or in my lap. I always take up two.
What do you think about when your buddy gets popcorn and he has the popcorn on his lap? I always take a handful and then put it on my lap so that I don't have to keep going back every bite.
So you have oil stains? Put it in your fucking cup holder, you
Ew. So the Bene Gesserit.
Oh, my God.
Like, good.
Garrick fully left us to go to Instagram.
Because I didn't, like, I think that is crazy that you think you get two cup holders.
I don't know a world in which anyone thinks otherwise.
There's literally, like, there are more seats than there are cup holders. Am I being
one
wrong?
One person gets two. The person who sits on the left.
No, I think whoever sits first is going to decide the flow of the room.
Kelsey, if you get two cup holders, that means someone gets no cup holders.
You know what?
What?
Women have been held down for long enough.
Don't tell me what to do with my hole, Zachary.
Okay, go on.
It's so funny.
Carry on about your fucking Sandy movie. Let's go.
There's two huge things that we have to talk about at least.
We got it. Okay. All right.
Worm.
I don't know if Zach saw this or not, but during the sequence, I was tearing up.
Yep.
Because it was such a spectacle and so well executed and well pulled off that I was like losing my mind.
It was Worm in a Million.
It was Worm in a Million. I was like truly grateful that I was able to witness this in my lifetime.
That's how I feel about Harry Potter.
Fuck off. This is better than Harry Potter.
I knew I would get him.
Timmy anyway. Rides a goddamn worm.
He rides a
big
worm.
Hairy butthole worm.
Rides a big old butthole worm. Something that should look goofy was made to look fucking spectacular.
Kind of cute.
Kind of adorable.
It doesn't look scary at all.
So he's looking for a place to put his thumper, which is a thing, the rhythm. I am being serious. I'm trying to be serious. He's looking for a place to put his thumper, his big old dump truck.
He's gonna call the worm.
To call a worm.
To call a worm.
To
come to his big thumper. Got it.
So he fucking twerks on the drum sand. And he calls the biggest worm. The biggest worm is just like, oh, I understand.
As it was written.
Calls the biggest worm. We get a good line from our boy being like, oh my God, not that big. It was just very funny. But he comes in. The worm comes in, and this whole scene, also according to Denis, he didn't know what to do with this scene because it's not in the book.
Oh.
Like, how he gets on the worm is not in the book at all.
From what I understand, the book is very, like, it's poetry, it's very dreamlike, it's very, and it skips over some of these details. Yeah. So people for a long time have been wondering, how do you ride a worm?
How do you get on a worm?
How do you even get on the worm?
But my question was, how you get off?
He said that he figured it out, and he can't wait to show you in part three.
Okay, now we're talking.
I fucking love
it. We've known forever that you can ride a worm, but he never showed you. Frank Herbert never showed how to get on the worm.
So this was big.
This was a huge fucking moment.
You
this
leap
is like
in the crevasse.
This has been living in people's minds for I guess Dune was written in the 60s. However long that movie that has been out, I'm not going to do the quick math on the 80 years. It's not 80 years.
He gets on
the worm. It's been lying in people's minds for 64 years. And the way that he gets on the worm, calls it the thumper, the worm comes in, and he's standing on a giant dune, essentially. Uh-huh. And then the worm breaks the dune, and then he uses that crevice to fall down onto it as it's breaking through the dune
itself. Do you think he met with engineers and architects to check this math?
I... I don't think so. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know. I don't think it matters, dog. Because
it's a majestic sequence.
It's a majestic fucking sequence. As Paul is just falling down the sand dune, essentially, you're watching a man kind of like fall to
his death.
His death, the unknown. We just watched in the first movie where like they were fucking sprinting away from this thing. It's so terrifying. And the idea of him actually jumping onto the back, you're like, dog, I don't know if you're going to actually make this. I know that the story calls for you to make it to the end. You're the protagonist. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm afraid for your safety. And you're just watching him tumble down with these like hooks. He's not grabbing onto anything. He's just fucking falling until he hits the back of the worm, which is also fucking moving at a locomotive speed. And he starts tumbling and all this stuff. And the only thing that he can do is literally grab for whatever the hooks latch onto, which winds up being the scale of a worm.
It's air flap.
It's air flap. It's nostril, apparently, that if you pull it up, you can steer it because it turns in the direction that its air flap is going or whatever.
All I knew was that shot where that little Timmy Tam is on top of that giant worm made me laugh so fucking hard.
It made you laugh?
All I could imagine was all the tattoos that I'm going to see on Nerdy White Boys of that worm with that little man sitting on top.
That's very funny.
So it was giving we.
Oh, can I tell you something that'll amp you up? So in movies, there's a first unit and a second unit. So like oftentimes, if you have like exterior shots or you know, you'll send the second unit. It's kind of like the director's working on the big scenes. They send the second unit to go direct something else. Has a different crew, has different directors. For this movie, they had a worm unit. They set up this system where while Denny was directing the rest of the movie, they would slowly, slowly, slowly chip away at this worm scene, sometimes taking hours, sometimes taking days to do single shots. And he was able to direct both at the same time. And they gave, again, days, weeks to just for this scene because of how monumental it is to the story and to the Doonies.
I don't know how, like, I can't wrap my head around how a movie this big gets made. Like, how
I don't understand.
How much time is he putting into it every day? What is he studying? How does he do it? Like, how does he study it? I just can't fathom how big of a scale of pressure of work that is.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about the direction, the movie. We've talked about a lot of the actors, but we've only really said his name in passing. Timothy Chalamet gives the best performance of his career.
Yeah.
Silence!
Hands down, like, there's not an ounce of hesitation in my voice when I say that. It is a role of restraint and then explosion.
Yeah.
And so you have this scene towards the end when he rises into the prophecy and he betrays Zendaya. The heartbreak that I felt and her performance is phenomenal in that. But he goes... He basically says, fuck all of you. There's no one in this room who can take me down. And everyone gasps. And he goes, I am Paul Atreides, Usul, Muad'Dib. I am the Lisan al-Ghaib. I am the one that your mothers have warned you about. I am the one that you have been dreaming of and fearing your entire life. Not a single person in this room can stand up to me. And you have this scrawny little white boy who is with this intense fire in his voice. Mm-hmm. And I believe him. I believe every second of it. It is from that moment on, my eyes are glued open.
Fucking lock. There was a double lock in. There is a double, like, first it's just like, okay, all right, you're watching a movie. Okay, people are floating. All right, lock in. This is fucking crazy. Oh my God, I can't believe they're floating onto that cliff. And then you get to that scene and you're like, Jesus Christ. There's like, you lean even more into the fucking movie.
How come he didn't want to go to the South? And then he went and was like, now I'm big bad boy.
He knew that that was going to happen because he can see.
Knew he was going to be a villain and he still went.
So he was having visions, these apocalypse, these dreams, because he's hypersensitive to spice.
Yeah.
So it's giving him these dreams of the future. And when he sees the future, he knows that if he ever goes south, he's going to become a messianic figure that is going to lead and cause the death of millions of people. Yeah. Which, by the way, I forgot to say, the moment when I knew that this movie changed, he has nukes.
Mm-hmm.
He has like 64 nuclear warhead missiles.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, that's what we're watching. We are watching the rise of a genocidal maniac.
Yeah.
But and so why he has
he has these visions, and then he drinks the water of life, the blue water. He sees every potential future. It's kind of, well, I was going to make an MCU reference. You don't know Marvel. For everyone else, it's kind of like when Doctor Strange sees every potential path, and there's only one in which they can defeat Thanos. And so he says, if we are to believe Paul, he sees death and destruction for the Fremen. He sees death and destruction for his family. But there's a narrow path that has that results in the least amount of suffering. And even that path results in
suffering. Yeah.
And now I'm curious if you know more than I do, Garrick, because I, again, haven't read the books. But this is so, are we to believe that he is leading because he's going to cause all this death because he genuinely believes that it will lead to less death overall? Or is he a dictator and he is actually going to lead because of his own hubris, because of his desire to lead, and he doesn't care who dies in the process?
That part
I don't know.
That part I don't know. That part I am not sure at all. It does definitely just feel like he's going off of a path that make sure that he gets the revenge that he felt like he deserved. I don't know.
And I thought about like he wants probably the best for his sister's future, which like spoiler alert, Anya Taylor-Joy is showing up.
Yeah, I mean he's looking. He's looking after his family line.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And when I watched it a second time, it actually made me really sad for Zendaya's character because it's clear that from the beginning when they are going to see the Fremen. He and his mom and his sister, that is who he's looking out for. Mm-hmm. And even though I do believe that he loved Zendaya, at the end of the day, his love for her did not supersede
his
own feeling of familial loyalty.
Familia.
And he has this thing where, like, he is Paul Atreides. He is of House Atreides. And what matters is that family crest going on. And he also, from the beginning, when he's entering the Fremen, he's not doing it out of, like, I want to learn about these people. He's doing it because he wants to trick them into believing he's the Messiah so that he can get back at the Harkonnens, use them as an army, because he wants revenge. He wants to kill the people that killed his father. That is what is driving him the entire movie. When he drinks the water of life, something changes, and I don't know what. Like, he becomes a different person, and he becomes absolute. But it's fucking heartbreaking to watch like this guy. I mean, this is the rise of an anti-hero.
Yeah.
This is someone who could have had a hero's journey.
Heel turn.
And instead, he has nukes.
Yeah.
Mm.
The beginning of the third book, as I understand it, begins that he's already killed billions of people.
Like 60 million people or something like that. A couple million people. Because the war between the Fremen,
the Holy War,
between the Fremen and
book,
the other houses who deny the emperor's or his claim to the throne, Paul's claim to the throne or whatever, he's fighting against them to be like, you guys got to get
Florence Pugh. She's great. We loved her in it.
She's great. She's amazing.
There's so much of it. Florence Pugh as the queen. Yeah. I mean, that is the betrayal of all betrayals. Where,
I mean, if you're going to leave Zendaya for anyone, it can only be Florence Pugh.
Well, he's not leaving her. He's just like taking, this is like a political hand in marriage.
Yeah.
It's more of that than the other, because in the book, she doesn't really storm off. For real. Like, she kind of just stands behind
him. Can you believe this, Rainey? That he tells, Timmy Salome tells Zendaya, I will love you to my dying breath. Then he meets Florence Pugh and immediately says, I will take you as my bride.
I'm like actually really interested in this, and I sort of want to watch Dune 2, but not Dune 1.
You can.
Can you do that?
Yeah, I went with a girl who didn't see one, and she totally was like, that was amazing.
I would very, very much just
I was confused by one.
I would beg you to watch them all.
Take it from me, Rainey.
In one sitting.
You and I are the same. You can see it without it.
Okay, yeah, because I'm like overwhelmed. I'm not gonna do it I'm not gonna watch two if I have to watch one.
Unless you get the flu tomorrow, you don't need to.
I think you should watch them both. It's just so really beautiful.
Yes.
It's not thinky.
Me no thinky.
It's
me watching.
It's post-apocalyptic in the future as well. It's
I'll try it.
Yeah. It's cool. And it like...
Maybe let her watch two and then she'll be like, I want to watch one now.
Yeah, okay, it's made me want to go back and watch one again. I'll say that.
Okay. Yeah.
I really want to watch them both in one sitting.
Christopher Walken?
No.
As the Emperor? There?
No.
He's in
Come
there.
Come on, man.
I burst into laughter. I didn't understand that casting choice.
So funny. I'm just happy to see him.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about like all of the smart choices that Denny made. He made, you know, you said Shani in the book doesn't storm off. She accepts it. And this, she storms off, which I know Frank Herbert, the author, was upset that people didn't get that this was supposed to be a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
And so seeing it through her eyes, I think, allows that.
Yeah.
In the book, every chapter begins with Florence Pugh's character narrating it.
Princess
taking her out of the first book, I think, is so smart because it sets you up to expect and believe in this love story between Zendaya and Timmy, which makes the heartbreak all the more. Ugh.
Do you have any fun facts?
Oh, wait, so that means we're done talking about it? I have to do fun facts?
Sucks.
But what about...
It sucks. It's nighttime. I think that this podcast could be another hour if we needed or if we wanted.
Can I tell you one last thing for a fun fact? Is that the big reveal of the movie is that the name of the planet in Fremen is Dune.
Fucking Dune! Everybody in the fucking audience should have pointed at the screen and done the Leo.
Which Garrick did.
I did it.
Garrick literally pointed and went, Dude.
That was a reveal?
Yeah.
Its name of the planet is Dune?
In ancient Fremen,
yeah. The way that Paul like proves to everyone that he's the least on Al Gaib is he's just looking at people. He's like, you have dreams about this and you don't even feel bad. And your mom did this back when this planet went by its... He's saying this all in the Fremen language. Like, back when the planet went by the name... Dune. And everyone goes, Lisa Nagaib! Lisa Nagaib!
And the funny Javier Vandem gets the funniest line in the movie. Lisa Nagaib!
Got it.
It's very good.
Y'all ready for some fun facts?
I'm ready.
So Austin Butler, hard to imagine anyone else as our horny
our
maniac.
Chiseled god.
So sick.
Which, by the way, did you understand in the lore that Paul was supposed to be born a girl?
No.
Paul was supposed to be born, Timmy was supposed to be born a girl and was supposed to be wed to Austin Butler.
Oh no.
But then Lady Jessica loved Oscar Isaac and he wanted a son. So she changed it to a boy in her tummy because she's a space witch.
She can do that.
And then changed the whole prophecy. But and as a result, when they're...
She gave birth to the Kwisatz Haderach. Kwisatz Haderach.
And as a result, when Austin Butler and Timmy Chalamet are fighting... Kind of like they're fucking.
Mm-hmm. All right, sure.
And Austin Butler's kind of turned down by him. You can tell.
Okay.
Before Austin Butler was cast, they considered Mr. Bill Skarsgård, of course.
Makes sense.
You know, Stellan Skarsgård is in the movie, and Barry Keoghan.
Oh man! Fuck me.
That'd
be
good. He's too little.
He would have been a creepy little guy.
He would have been a creepy little guy. He loves being a creepy little guy.
Put him in the third one somewhere. I'd like to see it.
I think he could fit in. Okay. Stellan Skarsgård's body makeup to become the big old worm man. 8 hours to apply.
Whoa.
2 to remove.
Damn.
Holy shit. He didn't drink anything and then took Imodium pills so that he didn't have to go to the bathroom during shooting days.
Oh,
the dude was constipated and in 8. Oh, my God.
Stellan, right? Stellan Skarsgård?
Yeah.
Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård has a, like, I'm bringing it out of Dune for a second just to show, like, how good of an actor he is. There is a scene in Andor, the Star Wars drama, that is his, like, somebody asked him, Andor is about the creation of the rebellion, I think, or the rebels. I'm sorry, but there's just a scene of him being asked, "What did you sacrifice in order for this to be a thing, or to start the rebels and all the rebel group or whatever?" And he goes on probably one of the greatest monologues I have ever seen, and he deserves props. I feel like he needs to be in way more things. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. I just love that scene.
I have a quote here from Frank Herbert, who I just thought this was really funny and you guys would enjoy. He refers to his writing style as having a coital rhythm.
Ew.
This is in an interview. It's, quote, "You see, and so we turned the whole thing, whirling backward through the story. There was another thing there in the pacing of the story. Very slow at the beginning. It's a coital rhythm. All the way through the story," the interview says, "it's a what? Coital rhythm." Okay. "Very slow pace, increasing all the way through. And when you get to the ending of it, I chopped it. And I went at a non-breaking point so that the person reading the story skids out of the story, trailing bits of it with him. On this, I know I was successful because people come to me and say they want more. And this dude took a lot of acid."
Wow.
This was the entire run of the book or the chapters has a coital rhythm.
The first book.
Okay.
Because I've seen people say that it's like really slow and dreamlike, yeah, and the ending is intense.
It's intense. It's a lot. Kind of like these
that's
movies.
That's like ACOTAR.
Very nice.
You read it?
No, because the first one is so slow.
Girl, just stick with it.
That's what I've heard, but man.
And I just made 700 new friends
this Female Dune?
This is Female.
ACOTAR?
I know a lot of people are reading the ACOTAR.
Yeah,
talk about coital rhythm, am I right?
It's and Margot Robbie was just seen meeting with the author, so that could fuck. It's giving Dune meets Twilight.
Yeah. It's much more. I don't know. I mean, I only read the first half.
It fucks.
Fantasy novel that makes you feel nice when you read it.
What's it called?
Derek's going to read it?
A Court of Thorns and Roses.
A-C-O-T.
I have a copy. I'll bring it to you.
Yeah, I also have a copy.
You have a copy?
You do?
I mean, I don't have it. But it's in my home.
Yeah.
So there are a couple deleted scenes from this movie, including the great Stephen McKinley. And Denis Villeneuve has said there will be no deleted scenes released. He is a strong believer, quote,
"Aww.
I'm a strong believer that when it's not in the movie, it's dead. I kill darlings and it's painful for me." I should be saying this in a French accent. "Sometimes I remove shots and I say, I cannot believe I'm cutting this out. I feel like a samurai opening my gut." This is a really fucking long quote. He believes that if it's cut, it's cut for a reason. No one will ever see it.
Well, think about it. You'd have to. At this scale, you would have to be like, this is dead and done and over. Because if not, you would go fucking crazy being like, well, maybe we could do a director's cut. Or maybe we do a second release. Maybe we do an extended. Like, no way. You have to, at this scale, just say goodbye.
Tim Blake Nelson was in the movie and he got cut out.
Who dat?
And we'll never know. He's great. You know him.
Oh.
This motherfucker, he was in Holes.
Oh, man. Oh.
Yeah, right?
Damn.
Don't you want to see him in Dune?
He looks like he'd be a really good white ball guy.
And then Austin Butler has a long quote about how he usually does method acting, but he didn't do it for this because he would have been a psychopath, and he realized that. So good for
and
him.
He also improvised that second kiss.
Oh, we know that.
Yeah, we do.
We could talk about this forever, but we must.
Yeah, we could. We have to.
Is this movie a pleasure, a guilty pleasure, or just plain
Shut
guilty?
Up,
yeah, it's fucking crazy. It's such a huge pee on the wall of pleasures.
Peed all over it.
You pee all over it. You thump all over it. I think that it's you need to watch this movie because you need to watch experience one of the mothers of sci-fi. I mean from Star Wars all the way to like Attack on Titan. It is a bit of the same plot. And I feel like anybody that has found those two properties or any property in between interesting should absolutely see this movie. You should also see it because this is what you can do with vision and $200 million.
Damn.
Yeah, the money helps.
The money helps.
If it's still on the big screen, make it a priority. Yeah. Get out there.
See it on a
watch
big
it on as big a screen as possible.
Yeah.
Try and find an IMAX theater
if you can.
Yeah. I'm at Corn Diddy on all the things.
I'm Kelsey Dare on all the things.
I'm Garrick Bernard on all the things.
Until next time, Lisa Nagaib.
Lisa Nagaib.
Yep. Bless you.